the man who Jim Rome claimed is the best interviewee in the business, is joining us now. Steve Elkington, the 1995 PGA champion. Steve, how you doing?
G'day, John. How are you, mate?
I'm doing great. How are you? Where are you spending short period of time off?
Mate, I'm down here in Texas, and we've had a horrendous time here with the heat and the weather, and now we've got bushfires. And, mate, I don't know, you know, it's been terrible. The golf's not really in play down here at the moment.
No, and the Champions Tour will be down there in just a few weeks at the Old Woodlands.
Yeah, well, and I'll be with them in a couple of years myself.
Are you looking forward to that? Are you wishing years away? You're still playing well at times on the PGA Tour.
Well, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I told all my friends that if they ever saw me on the Champions Tour, I just want you to come out and shoot me. But now I'm a bit older, and I'm getting close to 50. I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm seeing some guys out there that I really chopped up pretty good over the years. Guy like Russ Cochran and Ted Schultz and these guys. I mean, mate, I used to be able to beat those guys pretty good, and they're cleaning them up.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, those guys, Russ Cochran's won a major, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, love it.
Now, but there are times when your game comes together on the PGA Tour, and even at 48, almost 49, you can still compete with these young guys, yes?
Oh, yeah, mate. I know you know this better than anyone, but some days I come out and I play like Sam Snead, and, you know, and then I'll come out and play like Sam Sausage, and it's a bit of a toss-up. But, you know, the game's, it's a strange game. I try to keep my game in shape. I always have. I practice hard all the time. And to be honest with you, I've gone through a bit of a period this year where I just really haven't been motivated to get out on the tour. It's been hard for me to sign up for a tournament, you know, like tell my wife, go ahead and commit me for that one because I'm just, you know, I'm all in. But I haven't been able to do that this year, and I've paid for it in that regard. I don't have anyone to blame but myself, but I'm actually, and I've gone through this before in my career. This is my 26th year on the tour, so
right.
This is not a, you know, beginning deal. But, of course, you know this, when you first go out on the tour, you're keen, you play them all, and you can't wait to get there, and then and then as the years roll by, you find it harder to drag yourself out when you've got kids in school and they've got cars and friends and things going on. But as I was just saying, mate, I think I'm coming out of it. I've got the keen back in there, and I'm going to play some of this fall series, which I'm really looking forward to.
Well, no, that's great. We're looking forward to seeing you. I want to go back in time a little bit into your heyday. I mean, you won virtually every year in the 90s when prior to Tiger coming on the scene. I guess you could say Greg Norman was the best player in the game for a lot of that time. And you were one of his few close friends on the PGA Tour. He did not socialize very much. What can you tell us about that relationship without breaking any confidence?
Oh, well, Greg? No, that's fine. Greg and I have been friends for a long time. In fact, we're going hunting next week together up at his ranch, and I was watching that Faraday show on him the other night. A lot of people saw it. And I was just looking at that ranch, and I'm going to be there next week, and I can't wait to go up there and have a go at that. But you know, Greg Norman, you know, he was, you know, held the number one ranking there for a long time. I think more than anything, the thing that's kept us together for all these years, and he'd probably be the guy that would answer this the same way, is we're different. He's, you know, he's a very serious guy at times, and I'm one of the few guys that he really sort of unwinds with. When we go away and we go fishing together, we've gone with our families, we've gone on holidays together, and he really relaxes around me. And I don't know if it's just me, my stupidness that I talk to him about, and I make everything so trivial. It's just, you know, all we do is drink and have a few beers and, you know, just relax. So maybe I'm that guy. And you know what? I like to talk to him on the other hand about some business things and things that I'm working on. So I think it works out to be a bit of a blend there.
Well, that's true. And he's when I was on the tour, I had no relationship whatsoever with him, and not that he even knows who I am. But I've interviewed him several times since then, and I asked him once, why he didn't interact more with the players, and he said basically it was my job to beat them as soundly as I possibly could, and I was paying attention. He said, I knew that you had two kids running around the locker room. He said, but it wasn't my job to be friends with you. It was my job to make sure that you were behind me on the leaderboard. And now that I've moved on, He said, I can actually appreciate the people around me a lot more. I thought that was, you know, he made some decisions, and it worked out for him. There's no question about it.
Yeah, well, you know, John, on the tour now, everyone seems so happy. And, you know, I see that playoff recently there that, where they're all touching knuckles after they hit putts and in the playoff. And I just think to myself, I mean, you know, that's just unheard of before. I mean, I guess there's too much money out there. They don't, you know, it's not that big a deal if you lose, I guess. But to me, he's right. Norman's right. And, you know, you don't have to be friends with everyone. Everyone says to me, well, who's the best guy to play with on the tour? I said, mate, I couldn't care less who I play with. I don't even want to know who I'm playing with. So, you know, who's your friends? You know, I said, mate, I'm out there to do one thing. And, you know, as you noted there was a lot of guys that won a lot of tournaments when I was on the tour. I you know, clearly remember, I won the 10 tournaments in the 90s, but so did Fred Couples, and I think so did Davis Love, and so did Nick Price, and so I'm talking 10 tournaments in 10 years,
right.
And so did Greg Norman, and Couples, did I mention? But at any rate, there was a lot of good golf going on, and there was a very consistent level of play there, but now it seems like, you know, you win one, you know, there's an old story on the tour, you win one event on tour, you're a champion. You win two, you're an architect. You know, that's the way it is out there now.
Do you think we've gotten softer?
Professional golfers? There's too much cash. I mean, there's guys out there. Think about it this way. Last year, there was guys sitting in a classroom in a sex ed class, not knowing whether, you know, where to put their hand. Now this year, they're being told that they've got to win $900,000 to keep their job. So what other college graduates are going to have to make $900,000 this year?
That's a good point. It is. You know, and Americans will love this. You are one of the guys who kept Colin Montgomery from winning a major championship. You came from six back at Riviera in 95. What do you remember about that week?
Well, I didn't come back from six from Monty. I came back from six from Els, but right. Montgomery was there at the time. That tournament there, that whole year, John, was something else. It was a bit of momentum the whole way. I won right out of the gate over in the Tournament of Champions. I finished in the top two or three out on the West Coast in a couple of events, and then I finished third at the Masters that year, and I had a chance to win the British Open the year that John Daly there. And I remember leaving St. Andrews. I had a putt on 16 or 15 to get a bird, to get around the lead, and then I bogeyed 17 and didn't birdie 18, and I only missed the playoff by, I think, a shot. Anyway, so I sat there and watched that playoff, and then I remember leaving Scotland and with my wife, and I just knew right there that I'll probably never have another chance to win a major championship. I'll never have one better than that, and at the home of golf, et cetera. I don't even know why I was so disappointed, because it was a great week, but I just knew I'd blown the whole show. Well, anyway, I went over to Glen Eagles Hotel, and I stayed there for 2 weeks and didn't move. I just practiced my game a little bit at the Queen's course and went fishing with my wife, and we messed around. Lo and behold, I flew right from there to the PGA at Riviera and just kept going, mate, and I just never let the foot off, and that just completed a great year for me there. I won the Varden Trophy that year, and it was 95, right. Was, you know, that was just my year.
And then we go to 96, and after that great year, you didn't win in 96. Was there a bit
did
of
I
a
not?
Letdown
did
there?
I didn't win in 96. I thought might have won the Buick. Did I not win the Buick Challenge or something? No?
You won. No, the Buick Challenge that year was a five-man playoff, 36 holes. It was.
No, the Buick, the one down in Callaway Gardens, that one.
Yeah, that was my rookie year. I was in the playoff there in 96.
Oh, well, then, of course, you know the history of that event well.
You won twice, and then you win the Players in 97. That had to be a highlight.
Yeah, well, the Players' Championship, to me, was I won it in 91, and what that did for me, as you know, a young player, I grabbed a 10-year exemption in 1991, which was huge. Well, I had everything going good, but in 97, I led that tournament from wire to wire, and
right.
I'd never felt that much pressure because, to be quite honest with you, it's not so much the field there, it's the course, mate. The course is so intimidating. There's so, like, okay, you play Augusta, for example, you know, you've got to dodge about four things around Augusta. Someone may say, well, no, you've got to dodge more than that, but really you've got to dodge, you know, the water at 12, you know, six, you know, they're not every hole, but as you know, at Players Championship, you've got to dodge like 20 bullets all day, right?
Absolutely.
So to me, that's the ultimate pin high course. You know, it's like the most pin high. Well, that suits my game because I've always felt like I've always driven it really pretty good. But where I've made all my inroads or made all my championships is from the fairway in. You know, that's where I've been able to hit the ball close to the flag. So, you know, that was my best performance I've ever had on tour because I started leading it and I got a bigger lead, and then I shot the low round of the day on the Sunday, which is very hard to do. Normally someone's out early in the morning and done it early. But Scott Hoke, who was playing with me that last round, he helped me win that tournament, and I'll tell you how he did it. He had a reputation on tour, but not, you know, he was sort of said weird things. He always had his foot in his mouth type thing, and he's not a bad guy at all, and you probably know him, and you probably think the same, but
sure.
We walked on the first tee, and I think I had a 3-shot lead, and I was pretty happy about getting out of this pressure that I'd been in for about 4 days, you know, and I just wanted to get on with it. It was like a 2:30 tee time, and Scott Hoke was on. We were on the first tee, and he came over to me. He said, "You know, if I win this tournament today, that'll put me exempt till I'm 50," because he said I'm 41. And I looked at him and I thought, "Well, you so and so." I said, "Mate, you," and I said to him, "Well, this ain't your tournament, pal. This is my tournament." Well, he just flipped me mentally. He flipped me from being all worried about what was going to happen today to just like a dog chewing on a rag. You know what I'm saying? And then, boom, I was off, and I never looked back, and he helped me win that tournament.
That is funny, and you know what? He did something similar for me. I'll tell the listeners about it later because they'd much rather hear your stories than mine. I wanted to get your thoughts on the President's Cup.
Yep.
Participated in four of them. You guys won as recently as 2000. It's headed to Australia this year. What does that mean for the game down there?
Well, you know, Australia is a very, very, you know, active golf, you know, country, and they play, you know, it's a great place to play because it's very cheap and accessible to play, and they're playing one of the great courses in the world at Royal Melbourne. But what happened to the fellas when they came down there to play us in 2000 was I don't think they were quite ready for that course. It was probably like one of the hardest tests. Royal Melbourne, I'm talking about, is one of the hardest tests as far as speed of the greens and touch and wind and just a you know, a legendary track. So Greg Norman, you know, looking at it from the international's perspective, you know, he'll be making his picks very shortly. But I think he's got to be. I've been watching some of the golf this morning. I'm interested as much as anyone on who they're going to pick. But I think they've got to be leading towards the guys that live there. You've got three Australians that are all from Melbourne. You know, and the reason that Jeff Ogilvy putts so good is because he grew up in Melbourne, and same with Aaron Baddeley, and Robert Allenby's right there as well.
Right, and that he's probably going to have to narrow it down to one of those guys because the way the points work for the internationals, basically it's the world golf rankings, and they don't move very quickly. Ogilvy would probably have to finish second or third at the BMW to pass Oosthuizen to get one of the final exempt spots. So of those three, who do you pick?
Well, like I said, I would have to lean towards, you know, it'd be like me saying to you, we're playing the President's Cup at Torrey Pines, and you've got three guys that grew up out there and they know Poana greens and they putt super on them. So, and then you've got guys from all over the world. So, you know, I'm Australian, obviously, and it would obviously be coming off as being a bias, but I don't know how you can go against the guys. Now, Louis Oosthuizen, if he plays good, and mate, he's a major champion winner, and he's South African, so he's pretty used to conditions and playing around the world. But I'm going for the Aussies. I think you got to put Ogilvy and Allenby, or what was the third? Aaron
Baddeley.
That's a toss-up between those three. I'd just say who's playing the best when the team gets chosen.
Right, and obviously they're going to be on display. Again, at least one more time. Are you going to head down there for it?
I don't know. I'm going to talk to Greg next week and see if he can find me a job. Maybe I could be in charge of frothy ambered colored beverages after the round or something. But it was certainly, it's the summertime, as you know, down there, and it's very hot, and it takes its toll on the players, mate. It's a long walk around Royal Melbourne, 36 holes, and it can get real hot. But make the Aussie crowds. They've already sold out the event, and it's going to be jam-packed. Last time we were there, it was just the absolute, greatest environment to have a feisty match, because the Australians, they love sticking it to whoever makes that long trip, whether it's in rugby or cricket or whatever. They love sticking it to the other side, and of course, you know who the guy they're going to want to beat the most is. The guy that got picked on the American team was Tiger. So it's going to be worth watching either way. And I think I might just slip down there. John, are you going?
I'm not. I'm going to do something that week, but we're not exactly sure what. I lobbied for it. I begged and I pleaded, but they said that they don't think that I would ever come back if I went down there. Now, before I let you go, the secretinthedirt.com. Talk about the website and how you came by the name and what people can find there.
Well, I'm in social media. I have been now for 2 years. I have a company called Secret in the Dirt, which is basically a social network for golfers. Secret in the Dirt was a term that Hogan used. He always said the secret was in the dirt, but it was actually said 100 years before that by an unknown Scottish player. That we've always said that the secret's in the dirt, whether it means you're practicing or you found a swing tip or whatever. But inside a secret in the dirt, you can find 500 odd so videos that I've shot in there with Jackie Burke, who's one of the partners in the company. And it's a social network. You fill out your profile, you can share, you can blog, you can talk with all the other players, all the other people. You can put up your own videos, and it's a lot of fun. We've gained a lot of momentum. And, mate, I know you Twitter, and I do too now, and I'm at Elk PGA, and I got lots of rubbish I talk on that. And in fact, you and I talk on that in the back.
Do you ever get in trouble? Do you ever think, oh, that one might be going over the line?
Whether mate, I live on the line. What are you talking about? I don't think I'm serious material. I'm not definitely not Golf Channel material. I think I've found my spot. I think Twitter's all right. I can take the punishment, mate. I'm not.
Well, that's actually the last question is that I think you'd be great on TV. I think that it would be fantastic to have you doing commentary. Did that ever present itself to you throughout your career?
No. Well, it has presented itself, but mate, I'm not a tower guy. There's no way I could go up that ladder because it's just not for me. But I do enjoy watching the golf, and I do enjoy tweeting at the moment about. During the telecast, as I found myself doing the last round of the PGA and the last round just the other day. So, I'm a golf watcher, but I just don't see myself doing that. John, I'd rather leave it for you experts, mate.
No. Well, I'm hardly an expert. I like the fact that when I'm on the radio and looking at the tweets, that every now and then I have to hit the button that mutes my mic because you've just tweeted something that – not only can't be repeated on the air because I'd lose my job, but has me laughing out loud.
Well, mate.
Whether it's the cartoons or the nicknames you have for some of the guys or whatever.
Well,
by the way, the cartoon. Talk about the cartoons for a second before I let you go.
I've always wanted to be a cartoonist. I do a lot of drawings of myself, but one of our in-house cartoonists, Calder Chisholm, it's sort of like, David Letterman. He has people in the back that write his, that does his material. So I come up with a cartoon, and Calder can whip it together for me in an hour. It takes me half a day to do it. But so I like to put up cartoons. I had a great one today with Phil Mickelson. That's just hired his new psychologist in there. So
she was just on, by the way. She was the guest before you.
Oh, was she? That's fantastic. So as I've tried to state to people at Twitter, the most. The highest form of flattery is when someone does a cartoon on you and people actually want to respond about it. So is anyone ever really not like a cartoon, for God's sake? I mean, if anyone finds it being offensive to look at a cartoon, they need to go to the Wall Street Journal and look what they do to the president, right?
I agree. No, and I actually I chuckle when somebody says, "Well, I can't follow Elkington anymore because the cartoons are offensive." I think they're hysterical. The Phil one is funny. The Bjorn identity one earlier this week was terrific.
Well, I tweeted a couple of times where the headline on Twitter was from the Golf Channel was shootout tomorrow in Switzerland between Westwood and McIlroy. Well, I grabbed it and I pulled it up and they weren't even leading. So there was some other guy that was leading. And then the next day, they didn't even finish in the top five, and Bjorn won it again. It used to be John, you know, the world rankings has distorted a lot of things, but one of the things that's distorted the most in my mind as a player is it loses who's hot and who's the best player right now. And you know, we all have to defer to the rankings and say, well, Westwood or you know, Luke Donald's the best player right now, and probably is over the last 2 years. But right now, there's no one hotter than Thomas Bjorn. He's won twice in a row, and he's beat all those other legends. And Webb Simpson, those two guys are probably the best two players in the world right now. And that's the way it used to be. When I first came through, guess who was the best player back then? When I was Calvin Peet. Mate, no one could beat Calvin Peet when I came through in 1986. And then the next year it was Andy Bean. Couldn't beat him either. No one could. So I'm still stuck in this sort of time warp between what you're trying to tell me what I'm supposed to be looking at and then what I feel who's playing the best golf. Does that make any sense at all?
No, I completely agree with you. And the World Golf Rankings, while entertaining, they could hardly be considered the end-all, be-all. Webb Simpson is 14th in the world. He's up from 27th last week. But clearly he's playing better than everybody in front of him. And Thomas Bjorn, how about the fact that all he did was move from 59th to 28th?
Yeah, exactly. Well, mate, I can look at the world rankings and try to find my name somewhere there, and there'd be a guy named Ramatunga down the throat from India who's ranked 50 spots ahead of me, and he probably couldn't hit his ass with his hat, mate. But that's the way it goes, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you're 100% right, and they're giving points to certain tours that just don't deserve any points at all. I completely agree with you, especially when international players aren't even allowed to go play on those tours. They're closed shops.
You know, the media gets all hyped up and everything. Well, you know, the Chevron tournament's coming up, and I can't even believe this is a take, but this is what writers write. They're worried that Tiger may not be in the top 50, that he can't get in his own tournament automatically, and they may lose their ranking points, which upset Paddy Harrington because he wanted to get some ranking points, and he was invited, but he's got to fit. You know, mate, how is the Chevron a tournament, mate? It's
16. It's 16 players.
It's a pro-am or something. You can pick up your ball if you want. How can it be a low ranking?
Elk, you're beautiful. You are absolutely beautiful. I wish you all the luck. Are you playing? Are you playing Fries?
I am playing Fries. I'm going to play those last four. And you know, like I said, my golf. I'm keen on the golf. And I noticed you didn't know. You failed to mention that Scott McCarron and I just was up in Portland. We won that Umpqua Bank Classic up there. Peter Jacobson. We beat Arnold Palmer and Peter. That was a big win for us.
You know, I did not have that in front of me. And what is it about McCarron? Every time he tees it up in one of those two-man things, he wins.
Well, he had me this year, of course, but he and I are great friends, and he's coming hunting with us next week as well. But that was a nice event that Peter puts on. You know, it used to be the Fred Meyer Challenge. He's got a new sponsor. And, you know, the nice thing about that was I got to see some of the guys I haven't seen, like Jay Haas and John Cook and Tom Lehman and Bernard Langer, Fuzzy, and all those guys. Mate, it's such a shame that the younger players don't get to see those guys, and it's just great to be up there with those guys.
No doubt. I'm actually part of the reason I asked is that week of the Fries, I'll actually be out at the Woodlands working for the Golf Channel covering the Champions Tour, and I haven't seen. I saw Jay last night, but I haven't seen a lot of those Champions Tour players since I played with them, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited about. You know, seeing them after they're finished playing golf.
Well, I tell you what, they play good, mate. And I tell you, John Cook, you can't point as straight as he hits. And Jay Haas, and Bernard Langer, of course. Him and Tom Lehman. I mean, they're no pushovers either. So, you know, the Champions Tour, as we talked about, and I'll be on that shortly. But we'll just see how it goes, mate. We'll just see how it goes.
Well, keep up the good work. You're terrific, as always. This will be posted this evening at McGinnisOnTap.com. I'll send you guys a link to it if you want to post it at
Secret,
your website at thesecretinthedirt.com, which everybody should check out. It's a great website. Elk, enjoy a couple of weeks off. And hey, you know what? Let's go beat those kids out there in a couple of weeks.
Mate, I'm tuned up. I'm going to do something, Johnny. You watch. You'll have to talk to me out there.
I look forward to it.
All right, mate. Thanks a lot.